real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.
Hello and welcome back to the Playbase. Today I am very excited. I'm always excited, but today I am extra excited because I have an old friend here, somebody who I used to dance with, who I share such a huge passion in my life, someone who is incredibly gifted and talented in so many ways in dance and outside of dance, somebody who's taken all of that beauty that she's accumulated over the years and knowledge and shares it on her incredible Instagram platform. Without further ado, Melissa Marcus, the kindergarten mom. And I don't even know if you're Marcus anymore. You'll always be Marcus to me.
I go by Marcus professionally. It's so funny because I feel like I went to a wedding and someone was like, is it Marcus? I said, no, like that's my professional name. But I do go by Melissa Marcus. That's
true. You're Melissa Marcus to me. And you are the kindergarten mom to everyone on social media. You've grown an incredible platform. Like, you are the DIY queen. You do things I can't even like imagine myself doing. And you're like, I got this. Don't worry, guys. I'm going to put this together. I have 24 hours to put together my child's birthday and I'm going to make every decoration. Don't worry. And I'm like, how?
I always say I'm not going to do it. Every year, I'm like, I'm not doing it this year. And I said to my husband, and he's like, okay. And then a lot's going on. And this brings me joy. So DIY all the time.
DIY, but also your creativity, your ability to understand and connect with kids, with moms, or parents and educators. You've created a platform that is a safe landing place for not just information, but also connection. This is actually what I was saying. I want my podcast to be is a safe place to land for people to feel heard and understood, for people to get access to information. Like, you share incredible resources. You share amazing ideas. Like, not in Florida, but last week in Toronto, we were supposed to have this podcast. And last week in Toronto, there was a massive snowstorm and we rescheduled for today. It is still snowing there today, but your kids are in school, thankfully. But you were like, hey guys, here are things that you can do at home with your kids because you're trapped at home and you can't go outside. And maybe you think there's nothing to do or you're pulling your hair out of your head. Here are some great ideas. And they just had to like click on Kindergarten Mom to get inspiration and be like, oh, here are so many things that I can do with my kids. And I think that is a beautiful resource, as well as just the way you are honest and real. And like, when I see what you're doing in your classrooms, when I see what you're doing with your kids, it inspires me. And so when I was thinking about bringing you on, I was like, I could speak to her about so many things, like so many things. And I think I want to start with the kindergarten mom. Like, where did this concept come up for you? How did this become something, a passion project that you created?
Yeah, so I've been a teacher for the public school system for 14 years, a mom of three. And my second year of teaching, I was hired at a hospital. I was seconded to a hospital setting, and it was the peak of my career. I felt like I was constantly learning, evolving, inspired, motivated. It was just the best job I've ever had. And it was a secondment. So it was only 3 years. And so when I was finished my secondment, I came back to the school board and I felt there was this like void in my life. I loved being a teacher. I loved having my own classroom again, but I just felt like something was missing. And I got married. I had my first child. I remember saying to my husband, it was December break. And I said to him, like, what am I doing? I just feel like there is this void and I'm not totally satisfied in my job. And he said to me, nothing is forever. Nothing's permanent. if you feel like you need a new position or need to change schools, like finish off the year and you can look elsewhere. He's very good at looking at the bigger picture. I'm very much like narrow-minded right in the here and now. Well, COVID hit and we were all stuck at home and I was putting dance and fitness routines online for my kids at school. And my principal was like, post this, you know, for the larger community. So I put together this really cringy Instagram account called Move It with Mrs. Marcus.
I remember. And I was
like, these like fitness, like just to get the kids active because we were like parks were closed. We couldn't go outside to the park or it was awful. So I was doing these fitness videos online and that kind of faded because we came back to somewhat of a normal life. And I present on kindergarten every year. And like, whether it be with the public school or private companies hire me, I've done it forever since I started teaching. And I ran into a girlfriend of mine at the park and she was like, why don't you do on your own? I was like, who's going to listen to me? Like I get hired by everybody else and not even hired. I do for free. And she's like, do on your own. So I was like, I have no presence online. And so I started posting things I was doing at home with my kids, things I was doing in the classroom, just to have some sort of online presence. And it kind of snowballed into this like bigger platform that I hadn't expected. And it was intended for this crash course to make myself known, but it just turned into this platform where I was getting everything I was missing. I was presenting, I was researching, I was talking about what I'm doing at home on mat leave, DIY educational activities, or I'm in the classroom and I'm seeing these challenges happen, or as a teacher, like the burnout rate as a mother, just all these things that I was missing for so many years, it just kind of came out in this account and it's become such a place of joy. Like I love connecting with people. I love posting what I'm like. So there's no perfect teacher. There's no perfect parent. And I'm far from both of those things. But I have a lot of experience in the classroom. I have experienced the challenges of being a mom of three and I know what it's like. And there's no sugarcoating. It's like, this is what I deal with. This is a solution. And it's been resonating with a lot of people. And it's just honestly been such a joy. And it's filled my cup, truthfully, putting like all my Instagram content online. So, and it's been giving me a lot of other opportunities. Like I was able to go on breakfast television. I'm able to share to a larger audience. If I hadn't have put myself out there in the first place, who knows if it would ever come to fruition. So I love it. And that's really where it stems from.
I love that. And I think one of the things that you're able to do is to tap into your creativity in so many different ways. Like you use it in your work. It's evident. You use your creativity, you use your dance, you use all of it. Like you see it through your platform when you're sharing like, oh, I'm choreographing a dance for the school, or look at my wall and look at my door. And I'm like, oh my God, like, no, go ahead.
People can like misinterpret that, which I find online is huge because you see what you see online and you can get some negative feedback of like, oh, she's just doing this for Instagram or getting paid, which I don't get paid. Like I wish I got paid, but I was this person before social media came about and I like to share. And it's like, if I'm doing that, I get inspiration all the time, people online. And if I'm doing it, I'm thinking, how can this help people? And how can I showcase like, yeah, of course it's a lot of work and you don't get any sort of like praise as a teacher. You really don't.
It is the most thankless job. Mm-hmm. It is one of the hardest jobs today. I think it's always been a really hard job. I think today it is significantly more so.
There's so many challenges that are thrown in our way and the people who are in the profession are in the profession and we push through it and do the best for our students, really.
It's, you know, I've worked in classrooms for so many years, for, I don't know, how many years? I want to say about maybe 17, 18 years I've worked in classrooms, supporting kids, consulting, you know, working with teachers, providing professional development. It is, like, I go into a classroom with a hyper focus. I am not the teacher. I have taught, but not in a conventional way. I've taught like mindfulness and social skills and, you know, I've taught those things in a classroom setting, but I've never been the teacher for an entire day. And I'm always like, your job is incredibly difficult. I actually think kindergarten is a very special and incredibly important time in development. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you specialize in this time, because it taps into early development, early intervention. It taps into understanding, you know, developmental milestones, what, you know, and then there's, you know, debates and contrast between a play-based model, a more rigorous academic model, and different opinions about that. And I'm actually curious if you want to share your opinion on that, because there are such conflicting approaches and each have their own, you know, highs and their beauty, and each have their own areas that somebody might argue would be less appropriate or developmentally appropriate for children or necessary. And I think also living in the world that we live in as parents, there is such a pressure for us as parents to perform in a particular way, for our children to show up and perform in a particular way, for them to be successful. And what does that really mean? And there's like worry that people have about their children and their child's development, or are they going to be successful? Are they going to do X, Y, or Z? And, or they're not doing this yet, or they're doing this and not this. Like, so like my brain is doing this. Like I can think about all the million things I have thought and had conversations about. And if I really think about some of the most important parts of development, it's like that preschool, kindergarten time that we like to intervene in my field. That's like the most important time to intervene.
Intervention.
Yes.
That's the thing is, this part of development is such a crucial part of the overall school experience. It's their very first educational experience.
Yeah.
Yes, there is daycare and preschool and nursery, but going to kindergarten for the very first time is a huge transition in so many ways. And I know it looks different in Florida than it does in Canada, but regardless, there's so much development and learning and growing, and there's not a lot of support for that. So you have these children who are going through such changes academically, socially, emotionally, behavioral, and it's really such a crucial part of their development. I truly believe, and that's why I'm so passionate about kindergarten, is because I know what can be done in the classroom, what can be done at home. And I know it's endless. Like you can never do enough, really. And that's what we feel like as parents. And when you're saying about like thinking about parents with their own children, I'm constantly thinking about like, okay, how can I make this better for my own children? And really that's where the school and the home work together. That's where the teachers and the parents are a team. And I really, like, I feel that way with my own children's teachers. I look at them like, my child is in your hands, and what can we do together to make sure that they're going to be successful? Because they're all so different. They all have different needs and different strengths and different abilities. And it's not one-on-one. Like, even if I were to homeschool my kid, it's a very different experience than being in a classroom. So parents have a lot weighing heavily on them, I find, because we want our children to be successful. But I also hope that my children in their own classrooms will be given that support that they need, because I'm not there in the classroom. I have no idea what goes on in the classroom. That's a lot of parents. They don't know what goes on.
Of course.
Behind closed doors.
Of course. I totally agree with you. And I think that partnership is, it's, you can't equate it to anything else. Like that teacher spends more time in a school day with a child than their own parent does waking hours, more waking hours,
for sure,
especially the younger child goes to bed even earlier. Like they're in school for longer periods of time than they are at home. And so having a partnership and working together and having communication, I think is incredibly important. Something that actually popped into my mind as you were speaking is you've recently been posting about these specific movements videos that you created. And I'd love to learn more about them because I, like you, in a former life, in a past life before children, I was a dancer like you. And I talk about this often, how dance really impacted me and how movement was a way for me to express things and to regulate myself in a way that I couldn't do any other way. Like I could hold on to emotion. I could have the best day or the worst day or a in-between day, go to dance, work through movement and song, like there was also music involved, and leave there feeling lighter, more connected to myself, more grounded. Like movement is so important. And then as an adult, I learned about using movement as a way to release emotion, but also using movement in a mindful way to regulate the nervous system. So I want you to share a little bit about what you do in your classroom, how you learned about like what it is, and share some insight and information about it, because it's very cool what you're doing.
I have children. I've always had students that have special needs. They have exceptionalities. They learn in different ways. They're all different. And what kindergarten is, there's no diagnoses. There's no individual education plans unless it's through a doctor, because they're developing at such a great rate in kindergarten. In Ontario, it's a 2-year process. So we have children as young as 3 years old coming into our classes, and there's, you know, we might pick up on these markers, but there's going to be no intervention or no support really for these children who learn differently, and their bodies need specific outlets in order to learn. Mm-hmm. And ever since I started teaching kindergarten, like movement is key to learning. Movement for me is key to learning.
I agree.
Like we talked about being a dancer. It was ingrained in us. We learned so many skills as being dancers that go beyond just inside a studio.
Yep.
But with that said, with these children, I just find, especially my young ones, when we move our bodies first thing in the morning, there's so much stimulation neuro through our brain, our body, our heart rate. I always tell my students that before we are able to sit and learn, we have to be active. And that's how we start every single day. We do morning movement. I always do a warm-up dance in my classes because it's routine, it's structured. They know what's to come. It's the same song. They love it. And it's repetition. That's what kids thrive on in kindergarten. And over the December break, I started seeing a lot of this lymphatic drainage on my social media feed. And I'm really interested in like trying new things and getting out of my routine, getting out of a rut. And I saw these people posted all these different movements, and they're very simple, but they had these like very complex names, like lymphatic drainage. I can't say that to myself. I'm doing lymphatic drainage today. So I thought, how can I transform this to be child appropriate that will be enticing and motivating? And so I love ChatGPT. Like I wrote in exactly what these movements were. And I said something along the lines of like, create child friendly visuals, black and white. So I'm able to like reach all my diverse students. I'm not characterizing it as one type of child. And I wrote out what the movements were, and I had to tweak what they looked like. And I had this visual, and then I record everything whenever I do any sort of movement or activity. Whenever I'm away, I always love giving it to my supply teachers to just press play and just keeps things in routine and not a lot of wiggle room. And so I recorded this lymphatic drainage, because I called it morning movement, and we do it every single day. And I remember coming to school last week, I think it was probably a Monday, and I was so lethargic. I was so tired. The weekends are never relaxing. It's just like any other day as a parent. And I was so tired, and I was like, I can't let this mood transfer onto my students. And you know, we started with our morning routine, and we said we're going to do morning movement, and I press play. I have the golden song, but the instrumental version, which they like eat up. They love it. And I'm telling you, I felt like I drank a liter of coffee. I was like energized. everything I was feeling before completely washed away. And that's exactly how these little ones feel. The ones who have ADHD or are on the spectrum in some regard, and they have to move their body. They can't help themselves. And when they're forced to be sitting on a carpet or on a chair, it's not productive for them. Whereas we come in, we do these movements, it's their outlet. It's stimulating their brain, their body, their body and brain connection. And it gives them that outlet that they require in order to learn. And so this is where I came back to before, where I find that a lot is going on with our little ones that we might not necessarily know, and we don't have the support for them, but something as simple as movement first thing in the morning will help these children thrive when that's what they need. They need to move their bodies. And I always say, like, I had a student having a bit of a hard time. He was by the door. He had flung his shoes off. He just was overstimulated. Lots of sensory going on. And my principal walked in, and she's so great. She like was watching my lesson. She walked in. I thought she was here to be with the child. And later on in the morning, I said, oh, I thought you were going to here coming here to support so-and-so. She said, no, I just was checking in. And I said, you know, he, even though he was by the door on the floor with shoes off, face down, he was poking his head and watching. She said, oh, I know. Just, I know he was completely engaged, because that's the thing in kindergarten specifically. There's no one way. There's no box for kindergarten where you have to be inside this box. Kindergarten can look so different in so many ways in so many different classrooms. And if this boy is on the floor, face forward, poking his head under his arm, watching my lesson, that to me is engagement. And so with kindergarten and movement, like, I just find that you have to be so flexible with this age group.
I like am eating up everything you're saying, because I train so much on so many of the things you talked about. And so I want to summarize and give you some actually behavioral lens from what you're doing, like intentionally and unintentionally. So you create routine, and routine is structure, like you're saying. If I'm doing this every day, it's predictable, and predictability is regulating to the nervous system. So if I know what to expect when I walk into the room, I don't have to be anxious about walking into the room unless that thing that I'm expecting to do is what causes my anxiety. Like, that's different, right? But I don't have to feel anxious or dysregulated about entering the room, because I know Miss Marcus is going to meet me and we're going to get to do our dance, and then we're going to start our day. And then I know that this, like, I know this flow of routine, like, I know it. And so having the same song, having the same routine, having something that is that repetition is actually very regulating to the nervous system. So I don't know, like, I know that you know this. I'm just like bringing it together as one thing. You created visuals, because visuals are actually really important for those who the auditory stimulation, the me telling you what to do, or even modeling like full motions might be too much. But if you see an image or you have the video that's repeating it for you, and you don't have to remember to listen to my voice or interpret and process what I'm saying, but you can see it, it makes a world of a difference, especially when they're in that age group, like you're saying, in certain age pockets, that's even more important. And then you went on to say that this child was engaging in a different way. And in kindergarten, there is no box. And I'm going to say there should be no box, period. Because that child's going to leave kindergarten, go into first, second, third, fourth, and will engage with the world in different ways. And to be able to understand how to connect with that child and every other child in that room is actually an incredibly difficult job. To accept their way of connecting and engaging, to find a way to captivate them, to bring them in, to find what lights that light inside of them and gets them excited. And so maybe for that child that morning to physically participate was too much. But for him to stay in the room and to be looking, you're like, I see you. That's okay. You're like, you're good there. That's okay. When you're ready, you'll join. Or when we get a moment and the class gets a moment, I'll come to you and I'll support you in a way, in a different way. To hear all of those things touched on in one classroom, in like one lesson. And I think I've told you this before, like, when I see what you're doing, it is incredibly powerful. And you may say, like, I'm not the best teacher, whatever, all the time. But you are a teacher who shows up with your full heart. Like, and even the mindfulness. Another thing you mentioned was, I was aware that Monday morning that I showed up and I felt like crap. Like, I was tired or lethargic, or I had a really long weekend, or, you know, like, maybe on the way to work, you got a phone call you wish you didn't get, or, you know, that morning you had to deal with something, or all of the above. Like, it could have been an accumulation of 55 things, and you show up Monday morning and you have a room full of kids who are depending on you.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, this cannot go into here. So what are we going to do about it? And I think that is such a powerful tool as an educator, as a parent, but as a human, to be so aware of yourself, the impact you have on others, especially those who are dependent on you, especially those who need you, where you are, you know, a person of authority, or you in a power position of power, whatever it is, to be self-aware that my state impacts them. Mm-hmm. What am I going to do about it? And another thing I'm going to add is, anything you do for yourself that's going to help regulate you isn't going to harm anyone in the class. Mm-hmm. Like, if you're using appropriate strategies, okay? Like, we're not talking about, like, you know, some tools people use, I would say, would not be the right ones. But if you're using mindful, healthy options, it's going to help everyone in the class. So when teachers are like, oh, you know, but if I give this accommodation, or if I do this, or if I start doing it in this way, what about the rest of the class? Like, well, the rest of the class benefits anyway. So if one kid needs a movement break, yes,
completely.
Yeah. If one kid needs to move, it's not going to harm anyone if we all move. And if we all move, we'll all feel better after. Because maybe the kid who's wiggling, it's showing a lot more their need to move. Whereas the kid who's feeling like heavy and like low, you may not see it as much, but they need to move just as much. They need to wake their body
up. Internally. Yeah. And even internally, like, I see these children, I'm like, I know there's something going on in your brain and you're not able to express it. I know you need these supports. Like, this year I put together I call it calming corner, but really it's just a place where it is a place where they can go for that sensory input and output that they need, they physically need, because I just found that there's so many years that these children were not comfortable in their bodies. They weren't able to process the learning. They weren't able to be present.
Yeah.
And having little tiny tweaks in the classroom, outside of the classroom, in the learning environment goes such a long way. And you're right. It's not just kindergarten. Kindergarten is really all I know. So that's where I'm specific about kindergarten. But I guess my fear for these kids is, and this, I guess, is a fear for everybody. It's like our own children, like, your teacher has you who doesn't know who you are, or you have these needs, you need the support, but you're not being given that attention. Like, I think that's an overriding fear as parents specifically. And because I'm a teacher mom, I have it both ways. Like, these are my children in the classroom. I can picture their parents at home, and I want to give them what I would want my child to be given.
Yeah.
And that's really what it comes down to as a teacher. And people, I love how you summarize what I said in such a beautiful, educated way, where you're able to, you know, identify every single element of such a short period of time, because that's what teachers are doing constantly. And I don't think people understand, to be honest. I think it's like they look at teaching as glorified babysitting, and there is so much rich and deep practice and learning as teachers that we just, it's endless. And there's so much involved that it's not just, I'm watching your kid, I'm helping your child develop so they're able to be a contributing member of society and thrive and survive and do great things with their life. So
You know, when I think,
if I could just have you like narrate everything I do, that'd be just great.
Oh my God, it'd be my pleasure, because I'd be like, yes, yes, I love it. I love it. That's what it feels like to hear it, because not everybody does that. And not because they don't want to, but because they don't know to, or because they're burnt out, or because they're focusing on the moment and being reactive to the moment instead of realizing, and this is something I didn't say that I wanted to say, is that all of that structure that you've put in are considered proactive strategies, right? Mm-hmm. So when I go in and I talk and I train teachers and I do this professional development, I talk a lot about the importance of your proactive strategies. Because if you set the room up, if you structure your time, if you are aware of your group, like sometimes you learn a group and you realize that that movement break in the morning is great, but you actually really need to do it after lunch recess. Like that's when you really need it for certain grades, right? And, or for certain groups of kids where like the dynamic is like a particular way, or I need to switch it up and I need to like, we need to have like quiet downtime right after this. And everyone's just going to read or look at a book. Mm-hmm. The lights will be dim. We'll play music, because if I do anything else, it's chaos. Like you learn your group, you learn your room, you figure out your flow and you use proactive strategies. They become routine. So they become expected. Everyone knows what they are and you're priming the expectation, which is I'm pre-teaching you what the expectation is. I love so much that you have a calm corner. I think every class should have that, and that it should be used in as much of a proactive way as it can be, and not in a punitive way, but in a more like, looks like you need this space and go use the space, and not like
you can't
be with the group. You have to go there, but rather, hey, let's go. Let's see this, or let's touch this, or even just finding an opportunity to guide them and allowing them to be there and having resources there that allow them the sensory stimulation that they need or sensory deprivation that they need, like taking noise canceling headphones. Like it's too loud in here. It's too hard for me to be in here. But if I do that, oh, that's so much better. And now I can regulate my nervous system. And
that's the thing is like, also I just worry like when I have my classes and I have students who are not like unable to sit on the carpet, and I'll say to them like, it's okay to choose a different spot. Like we have our Fantastic Five expectations, and it's like use looking eyes, use listening ears, have a calm body. And I would say find a spot that's comfortable for you.
Right.
And that doesn't really seem for everybody. And so I'll have a student who will just stand up and go sit on a chair, and I'm like, great. Like they know, they get to the point in the year, like we're already in January, where they know that it's okay to remove themselves from the carpet community circle and find a spot that they can learn better in, because we're all so different. I thought growing up, like if I had all these different things, what I needed when I was growing up, it could have looked so different. You know, I just find that, again, education is evolving constantly. And we'll go back to kindergarten, because actually kindergarten is changing in Ontario specifically. There's a new curriculum coming out in the new year, in the spring actually. Yeah, which we can talk about. But I just, everything's always evolving in teaching, and we have to evolve. We have to have our students also be able to evolve with it and not just expect them to be doing one thing at one certain way.
I love that. I really love that you have this flexible mindset. One of the biggest things we teach our clients in my field is flexible thinking, because a lot of the clients we work with have very rigid ways of thinking. And then I actually find that in education and in therapy, it has been very rigid in general, to the point where I sometimes have to say to a teacher, is it okay if this person sits in a chair, if that's what they need? And it's like, well, then maybe, well, what if everyone wants a chair? And I said, well, what if everyone needs a chair?
Right.
Is that okay?
Right.
Like, what if it was like, take what you need? And she's like, well, what if someone who doesn't need a chair sits in a chair? And I said, but what are they going to, they're not using the chair as a weapon. Like if they're sitting in a chair, who cares? Like, it's okay. You can have boundaries around the way in which you use the tools in the classroom. Like if you're sitting in a chair, your feet have to be on the ground. They can't be like, in the air or kicking your friends. Like, you know, have boundaries and rules and structures around the way we do things, but to allow them to meet their needs and being flexible around how we do that I think is a beautiful reminder for everybody, like even for parents. Like in my head, sometimes I have the way I think something should go or is going to go. And when it doesn't go that way, I have to be like, oh yeah, it's okay. Because sometimes it doesn't feel okay. Sometimes it's like, I need this in control so that I can get through what I need to get through. And if this doesn't feel or look in control to me, I feel out of control. And that's when we get into this like power struggle with kids. It's like this need to control something that actually, if you really thought about it, is like, if you just let them sit in the chair, it's okay.
And that's the thing. I'm also like, as a teacher, I'm one way in the classroom and I'm very flexible and open-minded. And I really like, I'm professional in a sense of like, I really look at what every child needs. When I get home with my own kids, it's like, I have this other expectation of them. And I have to like stop myself a lot of the time and say, okay, like chill.
Yeah. Same.
Like there's a I always have to say there's a reason why. And as a teacher in the classroom, I'm one way. And then I get home and I get overwhelmed by my 3 kids, not 30 kids or 200 kids, because I teach all the kindergarten kids in my whole school. So I think it's a really good reminder also for myself. What you just said, it's like you have to just like some things are just not the biggest deal. And once you work with your children, your own children, you're able to find a common ground and a solution that is not, doesn't have that power struggle. And I find as a, even though my daughter, my middle is in kindergarten, I have to constantly put my kindergarten hat on and be like, okay, she's doing this because of this. Like, wake up, Melissa.
Yeah.
Like there's a reason behind it. But we just, I find as parents, me specifically, I just have these expectations on my own children.
Not just you. I'm the same. Yeah, I'm exactly the same.
Yeah.
And I think, yeah. And it's much harder to be able to stay regulated and detached from outcome with your children than it is with your students or with your clients. You are able to almost like take a seat back a little bit and see the big picture when it's with your students and with your clients. And when you're with your kids, it's like you're in the moment, you're with them, you're feeling it, you're experiencing it. The trigger is like 100 times bigger than anything your student could have. Like,
totally.
I was just talking to somebody about how like my daughter will make a sound and I could have a client make the exact same sound, the exact same pitch, volume, everything, and I can tolerate it. My daughter makes that sound. I'm like, oh, stop. Like it's just, and it's not fair, but it's true. Like it is what it is. Like
that it is. That's just, it's, I guess it's human nature.
Yes.
It's because we also are put so much into our own children. Yeah. And so when we feel like something's, like you said, not going as planned, it's just this kind of like eruption. And it's like, I'm focusing on regulating myself. Like, yep. I have to get 3 kids out the door for their programs. We're all trying to get out the door. We're going to be late. Okay, let's put these things in place so we can get out smoother. I just find as a parent, it's just you're so much harder on yourself and your children than in your profession.
100%. Like, without a doubt, that has been my experience 100 times out of 100, that I can experience the exact same thing in a different setting with a different child, or in the same setting. A different child can say the exact same thing or do the exact same thing and I handle it totally differently because it doesn't impact me emotionally the same way. It just feels different in my body. I wanted to ask you about the new curriculum that I did not know about.
Yeah.
Tell me about it.
So the last document was revised 2016, I'm pretty sure 2016, and they're coming out with a new curriculum document for this upcoming school year. It's going to be released, I think, in the spring of 2026 this year. And I was looking deeper into it because I've taught kindergarten for 14 years. I've done the same curriculum for 14 years. And I was looking at it and I thought, I'm here for it. The kindergarten curriculum, well, every teacher is different. Every kindergarten teacher is different. But the new curriculum, what I believe most teachers are already doing is putting it into writing. It's talking about the importance of play-based curriculum, play-based learning, play-based exploration. But it also has an emphasis on explicit instruction. And as a teacher, as a kindergarten teacher, I am a true believer that you need to have direct instruction for key concepts and key skills, and then you can explore it through play. I don't believe that you're going to discover learning or actual concepts like phonemic awareness, letter knowledge, letter sounds, numeracy. You're not going to learn that through play. Yes, you can
explore. Through guided play only.
Not just play, exactly.
Correct.
So this new curriculum document, from what I've been researching, is stating that you need to have a balanced approach, explicit instruction, and play exploration, which is huge. It also has strengths like a typical, in Ontario, you know, grade one and above curriculum, where you have actual strands. Now, I don't know if the report card is changing at all, because right now it's, we write a novel for every child for every single element of the curriculum.
Which you're doing now, I think.
That's what we're doing now. But yeah. I'm not sure how it's changed, if it's going to change with the new document, but it looks like it's what most people are doing already, but it's going to be heavily emphasized, and it's getting the kids ready for the next step. It's going to have them be prepared to actually be able to read when they leave kindergarten. We have this kind of wishy-washy expectation that they have to be a certain reading level, but there's nothing put in place. There's no mandate put in place to ensure that these children will be prepared for when they go to grade one. Grade one is a very hard year to teach. Very hard, because you're having these kids who are in kindergarten who are doing mostly all play and not a lot of structured routines in terms of learning their concepts. And then they're going jumping to a grade one classroom where they're, it's completely different. So our hope, my hope as a kindergarten teacher is, and for my own children, is they learn these key concepts, these key skills that will help them move on to the next level, but still, of course, incorporating the play-based approach and philosophy, which I think is very important.
I love this so much, because it's interesting. In my field, we use a play-based approach, right? That's part of the model. It's not the whole model, but it's part of the model. And people who don't know how to insert the therapy into the play and are just letting the child lead the play miss 99% of what actually we're supposed to be doing. Play is an important piece, but if you are not finding the opportunities, creating the opportunities, structuring the time, working with intention in your play, then the play is a great way to explore 100%. But you're not hitting any specific targets. You're hitting whatever targets they naturally come across. Right. Whereas if there's an adult guided approach where these are the specific expectations or intentions behind our play, and we are going to play, and we're going to use this, and we're going to do it in this way, and this is the expectation, and I'm giving you direct instruction, because direct instruction is very important to learn. Because that is literally the rest of your educational career. And
it's how you learn.
It's how you learn. Exactly. Right. So to be able to put in both together, that's incredible. It's exactly how it should be. It should be beautiful marriage between the two, where it's not you're just sitting at a table, you know, learning your alphabet, learning your sounds. Like, it's not just that. It's you get to play, and you get to be a part of it, and you get to explore in different ways. I love that. And I'm so happy that that's what's coming.
I'm so happy. I was looking into it. I thought, okay, here we go. Like, it's changing again. What's coming? And I thought, most people are doing this already. Like, a lot of teachers that I know personally are doing this already, but the ones who aren't doing it this way, at least there will be a level playing field here. Like, these kids who will have this approach of explicit instruction and then exploring through play will be prepared for when they leave kindergarten. And I always say, like, you're not going to magically learn, oh, that's a letter A and that makes the A sound. No, you have to learn it how it's taught, and then you can explore it through other ways. So it looks great. There's going to be a whole section on STEM and coding and trying to rack my brain about what else is coming down the pipeline. But we haven't had training on it yet. This is just my own personal research, but it looks like it's going in the right direction. And my children's school, they're at a private school, and this is what they're doing, and they're thriving.
Beautiful.
So it's going to be a really good change, I think.
I love that so much. That makes me really, really happy. You mentioned earlier a little bit about worries about meeting the needs of kids in future years, like when your kids leave your classroom or even your own kids. And I'm wondering what it's like, you know, as a teacher, when you have a student and you've built such a great relationship with them. You really understand. And you're like, I see what you need. I'm able to meet your needs. You figure that out. You spend, you know, a year building such a strong relationship, and then they move on. Or maybe even sometimes it's 2 years, right?
2 years here, yeah.
Yeah. At the end of that, there's this like, there's a beauty in it, and that they're moving on to something, you know, bigger or more. And then there's this like worry that like, I hope the next teachers are going to see you in this way and know that you need this or whatever. Is there like a transition where you go over the children's profiles and what works for them? And is that something that happens in the public schools?
Totally. Whenever we do classroom placements, the current teachers go through the list of students and they place them in the future classrooms, and they have that connection with the next teacher to say, you know, these are the needs of the students. Right. This would thrive in this environment or with this method. And what I guess my concern is not necessarily the teacher, it's just the support I just find in classrooms. Like in the kindergarten classroom, you have an early childhood educator and a teacher, and they work together with a class of, at our school, we had over 30 kids in the year. Like it was big, big numbers.
Wow.
But when they go to grade one, there was only one teacher. This is in public. So one teacher, let's say you have 20 to 25 students, there should be a cap, but you know how it is. Yeah. It's more so when you have children with such high needs who need the intervention and the support and are not able to get it at that point, that's where it becomes very concerning for these children. And again, being a teacher and a mom, you think about your own child and what their needs are. And if they go into a classroom that you just picture your own children, like we picture our teachers, picture their students as if they're their own children. Mm-hmm. And when they move on, and it's not necessarily the next teacher's inability to support the children, they are very capable. It's just the amount of support is minimal. And that's just a system issue, I think.
Right. What would you say to a parent who is worried about their child? What would you say as words of empowerment or encouragement, knowing that, you know, there are incredible teachers out there. There are people who are going to love their child and do everything for their child. There are gaps in the system, as there are in literally every system, because no system is perfect. Mm-hmm. What do you think a parent who's listening might need to hear or need to know that would benefit them?
As a parent myself with three children, my whole philosophy is A, working with the teachers and the administrators as best as I can in a way where I am supportive of them. I am so supportive of all of my children's teachers. I love them dearly. I look to them as a way that I know that they are taking care of my children. And I don't know how else to put this other than just saying I support them through and through. But it's also important to, we know our own children. Mm-hmm. We know them at home. We know them with their specific routines. We know their strengths. We also know what their challenges are and what their areas of improvement are. And I really am a true believer in advocating for children. If you are a parent and maybe your child has gone under the radar, maybe they're coasting and they're not behavioral, or they're not a red flag in terms of the support that they need, but you know deep down that your child might need some support, or you're noticing there is a gap that might have gone overlooked, my whole suggestion, my advice would be, is in a very polite and respectful way, is advocate for them. Because if you're jumping down a teacher's throat or administrator's back, yes, they're going to help you, but you know, what's the phrase? You attract more bees with honey, right? Yeah. So if you truly want to be a team with them and help your, that's the ultimate end goal, is to help our children. And if that's your ultimate end goal, then you need to be able to communicate that with the people taking care of your children. And it might not happen right away. There's been times where I've had specific things that I wanted my children to work on that I know they needed help in certain ways, and it wasn't met right away, but through time it was. It takes time. You just have to be patient, I think, and advocate. Like, don't, if you know what your child needs, you know what they need, but it's also super important to be professional and respectful in that regard, because I luckily haven't had so many of those experiences, but I've seen parents that I know their intention is good, but the way they're coming across is really harsh, and it can be very hard as a teacher to get the children that support when the parent feels like they're against you.
I totally agree. I think having a team mindset and having respectful communication is incredibly important, because I believe everyone does the best that they can with what they have. And when they don't know better, they don't do better, or when they're not aware, but if it's brought to their attention and then it still continues, then you might want to go, not an aggressive route, but maybe go to like a higher person. But I would say communicate and have a team mindset is so important, because we know the saying, like, it takes a village, because it actually does. And we don't raise our children alone. We raise our children with the educators and their, you know, administrators and the educators who are working, not just, you know, as the homeroom teacher, but are teaching music or whatever. Like, it is all of that. Plus if your child goes into dance, or your child goes into hockey, or your child does anything else, those people are a part of their upbringing and the way in which that they work together. If your child's in any sort of therapy, everyone is working together with the best of intentions, I would say, for the majority of people. I can't speak on behalf of everyone. And so having this team, respectful, but like, I agree with you, there's an importance in advocacy, because a lot of the time, you know, our gut tells us something, and sometimes we get told something else and we're like, oh, maybe I was wrong. And so you like bury that feeling, and then it like accumulates and accumulates and accumulates, and you're eventually like, oh my God, I should have listened to my gut the first time, right? I think a mom's intuition or a parent's intuition is very strong. So listen to your gut. You know your child, and advocate for your child. I think that's incredibly important. But like you said, do it in a loving and respectful way, because the truth is, the person you're advocating to is the person who's watching your child, the person who's teaching your child, the person who's in charge of your child. You don't want that person having any sort of like icky or angry or, you know, bad feeling in a way that you advocated in a way that was like harsh or rude or disrespectful or whatever. So I think regulate before you communicate, and then communicate in a way that is honest but respectful. And work as a team, like that, I think is the most important element in raising children, is we're doing it together.
I also want to make a note that like being honest is so important, right? So like we talked about this being like hard on our kids, but I really emphasize that like, you know, your children. Yep. So if parents are at school and they're being told their child is a certain way, in what regard? They're not that way just at school, right?
Of course not.
Like I find that luckily my children are, what's it proper, like better behaved at school than they are at home.
Yeah, same.
But like you know your children, right? Like you, and I'm the first person to admit when my children are at fault or if I, something happens and I'm not, it's just so important to be honest with yourself, right? Like you can have that wall up and you can try to guard, I mean, we're here to protect our own children all the time, but I just think it's super important to listen when the teachers have certain feedback, because it's not just happening at school. It's for sure happening at home. And it's, if you don't work together, the child's not going to be able to improve. So that's kind of the flip side. It's like, yeah, as you know, a teacher, when you have children who have certain challenges and you bring it to the teacher, to the parents, bring it to the table and tell them about it. It's important for the parents to be very open and hear what the teacher is saying so that they can work together as a team in the end to help their children.
I totally agree. I totally, totally agree. And it's easy for parents to get defensive or to get their guard up. I'm like, no, that's not true. Whereas if you really sit with it, you might be like, how can we support my child? Is really like in the end, putting something on the table like that is we want to support the child in developing their skills blaming. Or whatever it is. Yeah. It's not like a judgment. It's not like I'm saying your child is a whatever. It's I'm noticing this. Are you noticing it too? How can we work together to support the child? And I think
I always say to parents, I would say to parents too, like if you're in an interview and a teacher is saying something specific to you that you don't agree with, like it's good to just sit back for a second, listen to what they're saying, regroup and come back at a certain another time. Like say like, I'm hearing what you're saying. I'm going to write these notes, you know, write them down, take them home, process it. And if you find that you can't react or you can't respond in the moment, it's okay to take a step back, process, and then come back to the teacher and say, like, I thought a lot about our conversation. How can I support? Or this is what I'm noticing. This is what I'm seeing. Because it, like you said, it might come across as judgmental, which it's not. But again, parents want to protect their children as much as they can. And it's okay to take a second in a parent-teacher interview and say, you know, I'll come back to about this topic at a later time.
Totally, totally agree with you. I think that's great advice in any area of your life, not just with parents and teachers. I think when you feel yourself getting reactive, table it and say, I'm gonna sit with this, I'm gonna let it digest, and then I'll come back so I don't bite your head off. Like, I think that that's a good strategy in general. Before we finish, which I could speak to you all day, every day, I like to leave our listeners with a question or a statement for them to sit with, something for them to think about with themselves as a way to finish the podcast. Is there something you'd like to leave our listeners with?
As in like them to ask themselves a question?
Yeah, or, a question for them to ask themselves or a statement for them to sit with.
Yeah, so recently I've just been, like we talked about before, how we're harder on our own children than we are with our students in the classroom or clients or whatnot. The biggest thing I need to continue to ask myself is, like, what is the reason behind this behavior? Without jumping on the behavior or thinking it's malicious or intending to upset me, it's what's missing here. What's the development that is happening? And this is the reason why it's coming out this way. That's something that I'm trying to really focus on with myself, because I can be very reactive. And so I guess for anyone listening is just, when your children do something that really bothers you or you're thinking it's intentional to make you upset, take a step back, try to look at the bigger picture and try to find out the reason why, whether it be asking them, researching, contacting Francis or myself, but taking the step back to truly know that they're not doing it for any malintent, but they're just learning. And we have to try our best to regulate, like you said, regulate before we react.
Absolutely. That's beautiful. Thank you so much, thank Melissa. It was so nice to have you. This was amazing. You're amazing.
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, my pleasure.
Real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.